Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. The only thing I like better than baseball is saving people money. Start saving now with a cash out refinance at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com. Lordo's Diamonds, we're coming to you in brilliant clarity thanks to our good friends at Lordo's Diamonds. This is their time of year, holiday season. Men's, women's jewelry. Mention my name, ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. See their selection, LordosDiamonds.com. We're going to visit with Brian Walton of TheCardinalNation.com, and there's so much to get into. The big story, the Cardinals announcing yesterday they have signed left-handed pitcher K.K. Kim. He's got a two-year contract for the upcoming seasons for $8 million. That's what it's reported as being. And Kim is really coming off a very good year a season ago. He was voted as the 2019 best pitcher after leading the KBO in quality starts. He had 24, second in wins and strikeouts, and third in ERA in innings pitched. And John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, at yesterday's press conference discussed the signing of Kim.
We had robust scouting reports on him. We had a lot of analytical support that backed up the success he was having over in the KBO. And we felt that when you looked at our needs, especially when you think about the left side of our pitching, it made a lot of sense to pursue this. And over the past couple weeks, as we were exploring the trade market, the free agent market, it brought us back to KK.
Will he compete for a position in the bullpen or maybe a starter? What's going to be his role?
Part that was so attractive to us was the fact that when you look at our rotation going into this season, there's certainly some question marks, and we felt like having somebody, especially from the left side, that could start had a lot of value to us. And so I think the most important thing is, in KK's case, he can be in either role. But right now, he's going to come to camp, he's going to get stretched out, and he's going to get every opportunity to be used as a starter.
That's John Mozeliak, and we'll get more into that with Brian Walton coming up. It's all aboard the newest restaurant in St. Louis, the Train Shed at Union Station. Historic space overlooking the St. Louis Wheel and Lakeside Fire Show. Before or after Blues games, visit the Train Shed at St. Louis Union Station. Upscale, approachable pub fare and cocktails in a beautiful space. This is the place to be, overlooking the Union Station Lake and its nightly fire and music show. It's all at the Train Shed, one of the great sponsors that we have on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Coming up, we'll visit with Brian Walton. Are you trying to find the sports fan in your life the perfect holiday gift? Why not think about tickets to the 8th annual Evening with the Cardinals coming up on January 11th at St. Louis Union Station Grand Ballroom. This year it features Ted Simmons and Ozzie Smith. Dinner, auction, private photo session with the two legends, and hear them reminisce about their careers. Get your tickets at thenccs.org. That's thenccs.org. It's an Evening with the Cardinals, January 11th. TheNCCS.org. Well, you heard from John Mozeliak, and now let's hear from Brian Walton. And Brian has TheCardinalNation.com. He operates that website. It is 365 days a year, every single day. Christmas, New Year's, Thanksgiving. Brian has articles up on both the minor leagues of the St. Louis Cardinals and also what's happening with the Major League Club. It is a terrific site for any Cardinal fan. That's TheCardinalNation.com. Brian, happy holidays to you. How are things going?
Great, Dan. It's an exciting time. We got some activity on the free agent market.
We finally do. When you talk about the St. Louis Cardinals, and just in time for the holidays, you can get your K.K. Kim jersey. K.K. Kim, a left-hander that has been signed from the Korean Baseball Organization, and he had until January 5th to strike a deal with a major league club. Well, he gets it, and reports are it's a two-year deal, around $8 million. As John Mozeliak, as many just heard, he said he'll be at least competing as a starter in spring training. But I want to get your thoughts. K.K. Kim, a lefty now, finally added to that Cardinal rotation.
Yeah, you know, the Cardinals haven't had a left-hander in the rotation since Jaime Garcia back in 2016. And, you know, there have been some guys they've tried, but nobody's really stuck. And, you know, given the bats that Milwaukee and the Cubs have, it was something that the Cardinals, you know, would like to have. It's not a mandatory, but, you know, a left-hander, would be a good thing to have in the rotation. Now, you know, as we've heard, Kim came with no promise, no guarantee. You know, he's going to have to come to camp and compete with Carlos Martinez and, you know, a raft of other guys as well for what looks to be that, you know, last spot in the rotation.
It's interesting, too, how this has a trickle-down effect on maybe some minor leaguers, and I'll start with one of those lefties that has shown promise but really basically didn't pitch last year, and that's Austin Gomber.
Yeah, Austin Gomber, you know, unfortunately, you know, he was in a great position in 2019, you know, given the needs that the Cardinals had for a starter during the course of the year, but he was hurt and he couldn't make his way back. He tried and, you know, he just wasn't healthy enough. And so, you know, Gomber's now going to come to camp and he's a year older, still has minor league options, but guys like Austin Gomber and Daniel Ponce de Leon, who are getting now into their late 20s, are, you know, starting to see the young guys like the Hennessy Cabreras and the Ryan Elsleys, you know, start to put pressure on them. And I'm not saying that they're going to lose their 40-man roster spots, but their chances of making St. Louis are diminished. And, I mean, you look at the left side, now you've got Kim in the picture. And, you know, we saw Tyler Webb come up and do a great job. And we don't know, you know, what's going to happen with the other left-handed relievers. There, you know, there could be a situation where, you know, Kim's arrival also puts more pressure on an Austin Gomber who might, you know, find his way back in the rotation at Memphis.
What do you think it does then for Hennessy Cabrera, who, by all accounts, we were told would have a chance to compete for a starting spot in spring training? And then we saw him at the end of last year. And I'm telling you what, Brian, I was thoroughly impressed. I did a complete 180 on him. I thought, man, this guy looks awesome as a reliever. Do you think that's probably where he gets pegged now?
You know, that's a great question, Dan. I don't know. He also, Cabrera went down. He was the rookie of the year in the Dominican Winter League last year.
Right.
He went down, and he's pitched in three games in the Dominican, only threw seven innings, but, like, struck out, like, 13 guys and walked just, like, three, allowed just one run. So it was a short tune-up, but, again, it showed the potential that Cabrera has. And, again, given, you know, all the options that the Cardinals have from the left side now, you know, let's say Kim doesn't make the rotation and he's in the pen. You know, how many left-handed relievers, you know, can they have? And so, you know, it could be that Cabrera goes back to start again and get innings down in Memphis, which, you know, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, because I'm not among those who've crossed the bridge to say that he can't start. I think there's, you know, still a possibility that maybe he will.
Where do you think the Cardinals are right now with Alex Reyes? They've tried to really monitor what he's done the last couple of off seasons with workout regimens and whatnot, and now they're kind of like hands off and saying, hey, you know your body, try to get ready, and we're going to see where we're at in spring training. Where do you think the Cardinals are right now with Alex?
I think they'd love to see him be successful, but they realize that, you know, the odds are get higher every year that, you know, he's not going to make it. And, you know, it has to be extremely monotonous when you think about, you know, Jupiter's an exciting place in March when we're all down there and it's buzzing with activity. Well, the other 11 months a year, especially the parts of the year where there's not even any minor leaguers around, I mean, it's really a boring, monotonous routine to have to rehab every day. So the Cardinals gave him some flexibility to go back home to Dominican and, you know, report into camp there if he wants to. And, you know, it's the situation now where it would be a tremendous bonus if Alex Reyes could come back and contribute. I don't think, you know, given the few number of innings he's been able to throw, it's not going to be realistic for him to be a starter. But, you know, if he can come in as a reliever and, you know, find some way to contribute, it would be a wonderful thing. And, you know, Alex is a great guy. Again, it has nothing to do with, you know, anything. And he's a great guy, and he's worked really hard. And, you know, you just want to see the guy have success. But it's going to be whether his body can cooperate.
I find it really interesting. The Cardinals go back to one of their top draft choices, and they make a move that kind of flies under the radar, and that's Rob Kaminsky, a left-handed pitcher that was in the Brandon Moss deal. What has he been doing the last handful of years when he was traded away to Cleveland and his progression through the minor leagues?
Well, Kaminsky was a starter, of course, first-rounder when the Cardinals got him, and, you know, he just struggled with injury, and finally he was moved to relief. And, you know, he's got a good arm as a left-hander, and the question is really going to be whether, you know, he can get back to where he was before. But even if not, he's a good minor league depth guy who can, you know, pitch from the left side in the AAA bullpen. Because right now, there, you know, there isn't really much left-handed depth from the relief side in the minor league. So Kaminsky doesn't have to be on the 40-man roster. So, you know, he doesn't take a spot from someone else. So bring him to camp and see what he's got. find under the radar deal, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I find it really interesting how the Cardinals have, and I spoke to John Mozeliak the other day, and he said, well, I can't remember what the term was, Brian, if he said they fell behind in analytics, or the guys that they had, they were just overwhelmed in terms of they needed just more bodies, more people to help out with the load of information. The Cardinals were at the forefront of analytics for so long. As it pertains to minor leagues, and I'm going to get into a coach that has been added to the Cardinals here momentarily, but how do the analytics work with when you talk to a coach or a manager in the minor leagues and how they're implementing that with their teams at their respective levels?
It's really a challenge because, you know, at the minor league level, you've got the manager, you've got the pitching coach and the hitting coach, and they're, you know, have to work with 20, you know, their share of 25 guys, you know, 12, 13 guys each. What the Cardinals added a few years back, and it's been a very successful program under Gary LaRocque, is what's called a fourth coach. And this is typically a younger individual who's working to get into scouting and or coaching. And they, you know, throw batting practice and they help out. They're in uniform before the game. And then during the game, they sit in the stands and scout just like a regular scout. And a lot of these guys are some of the more analytic minds. And so they get involved in trying to help. But, you know, the challenge throughout the game, no matter whether it's St. Louis or Chicago or Los Angeles, is distilling all this information from all these different tools and to try to help the player, you know, get that and the coach get that segment of information that's most important to them.
I don't know if you're in agreement with me, but one of the players, position players, I'm intrigued with, excited to watch in spring training, and will keep a close eye on is Justin Williams. Cardinals need a left-handed bat. I think the outfield could be wide open as currently constructed, and that includes center field potentially. I don't know about you, Brian, but I'm excited to see what this kid's got with the way that he finished up last year.
You know, Justin Williams, you know, folks who don't know his name because, you know, he wasn't really on the radar this last season. Justin Williams was the guy that everybody thought was going to be the top player that the Cardinals got for Tommy Pham. Now, Hennessy Cabrera is kind of passing by, but Williams, left-hand hitting outfield, good power potential, came up to Tampa Bay very briefly right before the trade. But then, you know, last season he got injured in the offseason. Where he punched the television set, unfortunately, and that really put him back all year. The Cardinals had to send him down to Double A for a while to kind of get going again, and it took him until the final month of the season with Memphis before he really started hitting the ball well. But apparently, it wasn't enough of a body of work that the Cardinals called him up in September. So, you know, Justin Williams is basically going to be reporting to his first spring training camp as an active player with the St. Louis Cardinals, and like you said, you know, they need left-handed hitting. He's a good outfielder, but, you know, they've got the Cardinals. And I don't envy the job they have in the spring because they've got to sort through Bader and Adolis Garcia and Dylan Carlson and Rosarena. You know, they got to get all these guys at bats and try to figure out, you know, who, and of course, Tyler O'Neill, you know, to figure out which guys are going to be on the roster to start the year.
Remember, make one of the 10 area Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill locations your home for Blues hockey this year. You can enjoy all the games on dozens of TVs while you'll enjoy great specials on Jack Daniel's cocktails, Blue Sampler appetizers, much more. Hot Shots is a proud partner of your St. Louis Blues, home to Blues fans since 1990. If you're looking for a complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all that for $22. Need a haircut? Think Hair Saloon for Men. Get cleaned up for this holiday season at Hair Saloon for Men. Brian, I think there was some good news concerning Larry Walker and his potential for baseball's Hall of Fame, which, by the way, will coincide. It'll be right around the Cardinals fantasy camp, and Larry is scheduled to be there. And wouldn't that be something if we find out that announcement right around that time? But Larry Walker, some of the voters are getting their votes in, and right now the news is trending in the right direction, isn't it, for Larry Walker?
That's right. The voters have already filed their ballots, I think they have until the end of the year to file their ballots. And it's roughly 425 members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. And, you know, the ballot information now is starting to trickle out. It's still less than 10% of the ballots are known. So I'm sure people who do polling can talk to us about what's statistically significant and not. But the good news is, of the ballots that are known, Larry Walker's percent went up from about 55% last year to now about 83%. And just to refresh for those who don't know, 75% of the ballots is what's needed to get into the Hall of Fame. So if Walker continues on his current pace in his 10th and final year, he might finally get that call to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, we know Derek Jeter is going to be, you know, he's a lock. He's going to get in. The only question is whether he gets 100% or not. But it would be really great for Larry Walker in his last chance to finally make the Hall of Fame. The other thing I want to say about the voting, Scott Rolen has also increased his share from 17 to 37%. So while Scott's not going to make it this year, you know, this is only his third year on the ballot, so he'd have seven more years to go. So, you know, if he continues to creep up, you know, he'll be another guy who, you know, in a few years we might be talking about, you know, would be on the cusp of getting Cooperstown consideration, which would be a really nice thing.
You have a privilege to be on a panel of experts that follow Cardinals baseball that will at least have the names. They'll come together in a room, and maybe you can describe this a little bit more, but come together in a room and make the case for certain players to be on a ballot to be voted into the Cardinals Hall of Fame. I think Keith Hernandez's time is overdue. I think he'll get in this year. Who else do you think is out there that might get pushed into? Because I'm going to throw a couple of names at you that I think would be of interest. One has already been voted on before, and that's John Tudor, and I think that he would have a great shot. And if Tommy Herr gets on the ballot, and you got to think that Whitey's going to push for him, I think Tommy Herr would have a great shot. What? How about you? What do you think?
That's right, and they all should be back on the ballot. We'll see. Guys like Matt Morris, Edgar Renteria, Rolen, who I mentioned in the Cooperstown context, is also under consideration as well. You know, the challenge that the older players, and I say older, there's certainly guys that I watch play, but you know, guys like Tudor and Hernandez, you know, they're just not as fresh in people's minds because a lot of people who are voting and take the time to do the online voting, you know, maybe didn't see them play. And, you know, in the case of Tudor, he had success with other teams as well as the Cardinals. Same with Hernandez, who, of course, went to the Mets and was a big star there, almost at the level he was in St. Louis. But, you know, I think if you look at the body of work of any of these guys, whether we're talking about Herr or Tudor or Hernandez or even some of the younger guys like Morris and Rolen and Renteria, you know, they've all got decent numbers and are certainly worth consideration. And I would expect all of them to be on the fan ballot this year. We don't know yet, but, you know, odds are pretty good that, you know, since these guys' stats haven't changed since last year, you know, chances are good if they've made the ballot before, they'll probably be back on the ballot again.
The DeWitt family has such a great understanding of baseball history and obviously St. Louis Cardinal history, and they take amazing care with it, kid glove care with it, which I appreciate as a fan and a lifelong citizen of St. Louis. And I'm curious, when it becomes time to see a Ted Simmons go into the Hall of Fame, which has happened now, he will go into baseball's Hall of Fame, should you retire his number? Where do you stand on that, Brian, and what do you think the criteria is for the DeWitts looking at trying to maybe make that decision and retiring Ted Simmons' number?
I will tell you that the DeWitts take this very, very seriously, which is a great thing. You know, in these Hall of Fame committee meetings that we were just talking about, they don't just show up, and I'm talking about Bill DeWitt Jr. and Bill DeWitt III, they don't just show up at the beginning and, you know, announce, you know, a mission to the group and come back at the end of the day to see the results. They stay in the room and they participate. And that's not something a lot of owners, I'm sure, across baseball would do. But, you know, the Cardinals are a franchise steeped in history, and, you know, the DeWitts have grown up around the game their entire lives. So, you know, it really makes sense. On the issue of retired numbers, unfortunately, this is going to be an unpopular position with some of the people listening on this call, I think. But my feeling is that the Cardinals waited too long to create their Hall of Fame. And in my thinking, at least, there's an implied hierarchy. Retired numbers are for the best of the best, the very best, the no doubt about it. And now then you have the Cardinals Hall of Fame, where you have a number of other very, very deserving players. But to me, a retired number is a Bob Gibson. It's a Lou Brock. It's an Albert Pujols one day. The guys who are, you know, the multiple MVPs, multiple Cy Young Award winners, the no doubt about it, best players in the game. And so I think the retired number designation really needs to be looked at carefully. And I don't think I would do it for Ted Simmons. And there's always emotion when something, you know, happens and Ted Simmons is in the news and he's, you know, very deserving to go into Cooperstown, but I don't think I'd retire his number.
Do you think it has anything to do with the Red Jackets statues and retired numbers and how that all fits together? If you're going to do one, you got to do a bunch or vice versa.
Well, Well, and again, everything kind of grew up separately. Retired numbers, you know, were one way, and the statues were another way, and the Hall of Fame, unfortunately, didn't come along years later. You know, Cincinnati Reds have had a team Hall of Fame since the 1950s. And I, for years and years and years, I said, my gosh, why don't the Cardinals do it? Why don't the Cardinals do it? Because there were some numbers that were retired that probably, in hindsight, maybe shouldn't have. And it's got to be an exclusive, exclusive thing. Because when you look in the future, you look at number five and you say, hey, that's definitely going to get retired someday. Probably number four, too, although, you know, we could maybe debate it. So, you know, there's some other guys coming down the road as well. And to take nothing away from Ted Simmons, who was my favorite player in the 1970s on the Cardinals, I admit that. I just don't think I'd do that retired number right now.
Brian, let's wrap it up with this, thecardinalnation.com. What do you have going on?
Well, we're working on two things at once. One is we're now into our top 15 of the top 50 prospects of the year. And Justin Williams, the player we talked about a little earlier, his number 15 on the list, and his write-up is free, so you can go read that if you want. And then we're also now doing the top 10 stories of the year across the Cardinals system. So we talked about Jeff Albert and the changes that have been done on the hitting side. Talked about the strange situation with Carlos Martinez, the success of the relief corps that really was a big part of the team. And then now today's story is about the defensive improvements that have occurred in the Cardinals as well. So we'll be rolling out those top 10 stories of the year. And also by the end of the year, we'll get down to number one. And, you know, you got to assume that Dylan Carlson and Nolan Gorman are going to be right there at the top.
No doubt about it. Hey, Brian, thanks so much. We'll catch up next week.
Take care, Dan.